and welcome to the ESBS podcast. I am Laurence Bertrand.
And I'm Susanne Stockmans. Today we are going to discuss the impact of infrapopliteal revascularization establishing inline flow to the wound in patients with chronic limb-threatening ischemia, a study published by Osama Iida et al., a Japanese team of researchers, in the European Journal of Vascular and Endovascular Surgery, November 2024. Let's start by looking at what this paper has to add.
As clinicians, we are frequently reminded of the dangers of chronic limb-threatening ischemia, CLTI. Research shows that the risk of amputation in CLTI patients remains high. Regarding infrapopliteal revascularization, despite the vast range of endovascular material available to us, independent evidence proving efficacy of below-knee procedures and providing a basis to support this treatment strategy remains scarce. This study aims, at least in part, to fill this important gap. This is a multi-center prospective observational study looking at the effect of any infrapopliteal revascularization, be it open or endovascular, in over 400 CLTI patients, focusing on the achievement of inline flow to the wound and not to the foot, and what effect this actually had on wound healing.
You mentioned inline flow to the wound. What is it exactly as opposed to inline flow to the foot?
So inline flow to the foot as a goal of infrapopliteal revascularization would mean achieving flow in a straight line from the popliteal artery to the affected angiosome by treating the according target vessel and the anterior tibial, posterior tibial, or peroneal artery. Inline flow to the wound, on the other hand, allows for revascularization of collaterals or choosing a mismatched artery to the traditional angiosome anatomy if that vessel actually feeds the wound according to the personalized angiogram. I've recommended listeners to check out the full article to see a very clear figure that the authors have included to help readers understand the difference between both approaches, angiosome and wound inline flow revascularization. The author's stated definition for inline flow to the wound is, and I quote, a revascularization after which a tibiopedial artery that actually fed an injured pedal unit was patent.
Can you tell us more about the methods of the study? You mentioned it is an observational study. How did they standardize diagnostics and treatment?
Yes, so patients were prospectively enrolled and had a planned two-year follow-up. Systematic diagnostics were performed, including Wi-Fi classification of the foot, skin perfusion pressure, which was a dedicated standardized device, duplex ultrasound, and preoperative digital subtraction angiography. Treatment was left to the discretion of the surgeon or treating physician. Each of the 23 participating centers had the option to treat endovascularly or surgically. Bypasses were venous and percutaneous angioplasty used non-coated balloons. Above the knee stenting or drug-eluting angioplasty were allowed and recorded. Follow-up was scheduled every 2 to 4 weeks until wound healing was complete, and every 3 months thereafter, all patients received a final follow-up at 24 months with a margin of variation of 2 months. A core laboratory collected wound photographs and angiograms before and after revascularization. Wi-Fi classification was done by a plastic surgeon who was blinded to the angiographic information. And a vascular interventionist and vascular surgeon in the core lab evaluated the angiograms with photos of the wounds to determine if inline flow to the wound was or was not achieved.
Before we move to the outcomes and results, what were the inclusion and the exclusion criteria?
So inclusion criteria were CLTI patients above 20 years old with an ischemic wound and skin perfusion pressure below 40 millimeters mercury. Plan for infrapopliteal revascularization. Exclusion criteria were patients with CLTI primarily caused by non-atherosclerotic chronic vascular conditions of the lower extremity, and those with extensive ischemic ulcers or gangrene beyond the ankle joint, where limb salvage was deemed impractical, even with revascularization, or major amputation was already scheduled.
What were the outcome measures?
The stated primary outcome was, and I quote, complete wound healing defined as achievement of complete epithelialization of all wounds without major amputation. The Wi-Fi score at last follow-up, the rates of successful inflow revascularization to the wound versus to the foot, and overall mortality were also analyzed. Inverse probability of treatment weighting based on the propensity score was used to minimize intergroup differences in baseline characteristics. Since revascularization strategies during the infrapopliteal endovascular procedure were expected to be distinct from those during bypass, the propensity score for infrapopliteal endovascular cases and that for bypass cases was developed separately from each other. The propensity score was calculated using a logistic regression model. The following explanatory variables were included in the model: age, sex, mobility, smoking, renal failure on dialysis, diabetes, history of infrapopliteal revascularization, loss of protective sensation, severity of CLTI evaluated with Wi-Fi classification, and femoropopliteal endovascular procedure.
Let's move on to the results. First, can you describe the study population and what kind of revascularization they received?
There was a total of 440 patients. The median age was 75 years old, and 64% were men. 72% were diabetic, and 58% were on dialysis. All patients had some form of wound or tissue loss. 66% were Wi-Fi clinical stage 4. Bypass grafting was performed in 31%, which is 136 patients, and the other 69% received endovascular revascularization, which is 304 patients. 91% of patients completed the two-year follow-up, resulting in a median follow-up of 23.6 months overall.
So what were the main findings of the study?
Successful inline flow revascularization to the wound was achieved in 68% of patients, and 51% achieved wound healing. The group that achieved inline flow to the wound had a higher rate of wound healing, 34.5 versus 16.1 per 100 person years, with a p-value of 0.03, which equates to a risk ratio of 2.13, 95% confidence interval 1.08 to 4.20. Mortality of any cause was not significantly higher in the non-inflow wound group.
How about the different treatment approaches? Did endovascular or bypass treatment do better in this study?
The association between inflow to the wound and wound healing was not statistically significantly different between the pleural bypass and the infrapopliteal endovascular procedure groups. So whether a bypass or a POBA has achieved the inflow to the wound was irrelevant to its effect on the wound. The important thing was to actually achieve inflow to the wound.
What other results or analyses of interest were reported?
So one of the secondary analyses was to do the same statistical inspection of the data using direct revascularization according to the classical angiosome concept. So thinking back to the beginning of this episode, comparing groups that did or did not achieve inline flow to the foot by angiosome, regardless of the actual flow to the wound, they found that there was no statistically significant difference in wound healing. Next, they looked at the groups that did or did not achieve inline flow to the wound and compared their baseline characteristics. They found that inflow to the wound was more likely to be achieved in older patients free from dialysis with smaller wounds. However, none of these baseline characteristics had a statistically significant effect on the interaction between flow achievement and wound healing.
Thank you so much for summarizing the results. What were the main limitations of the study?
Well, based on the study design, there are inherent limitations of using an ethnically all Japanese patient population and mixing treatment modalities without randomization. Other listed limitations include a small sample size for subset analyses and the fact that details of anatomical variants were not assessed. Personally, I would add that with a patient's perspective in mind, it might be valuable to gain insight on the number of minor amputations and the incidence of recurrent CLTI within the two-year follow-up. It would also be good to know if the reintervention and rehospitalization rates were affected.
What are the main conclusions of the study? Do the authors suggest any changes to our clinical practice?
The stated conclusion is that infrapopliteal revascularization inline flow to the wound was statistically significantly associated with a higher wound healing rate in patients with CLTI, regardless of the technique used and regardless of whether direct revascularization, that is angio-based flow, was or wasn't achieved. I think it is fair to say that this is not saying that endo or open approach would have had equal effect on every patient, but rather that surgeons seem to be doing a good job at already selecting the appropriate patients for appropriate treatments, as clinical results that matter to patients, wound healing, was comparable if inline flow to the wound was achieved.
Okay, and before we finish, perhaps we can summarize in the form of some take-home message.
So we need to consider inline flow in reference to the wound and really understand where a wound is getting its flow from. That is the specific tibial vessel and the collateral flow before choosing a management strategy and a target vessel.
All right. Thank you so much for your comprehensive review. We encourage all our listeners to read the complete article with all the data and details. We will link the complete article in the show notes as well as some related studies. That brings today's episode to a close. More discussion on key papers, new guidelines, and other vascular podcasts coming up soon. In the meantime, please follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram to stay updated on new releases.
We wish you all a great day. Talk to you again soon. Goodbye.
Bye.